Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Hey, Alyssa, we're in California, right? I mean, this is going to sound completely out of place for anybody who's just weighing in right now because it's mid-conversation with Paul. But
what are you talking about?
I did something, and he's like, wow. Like, he was surprised. Like, you know, I think there was maybe a little
he's
bit of...
checking to see if we're really streaming.
Yes,
here.
There was a little offense, actually, in your wow. Actually, I detected a little offense.
How many years we've been doing this, and he turns on his cell phone to see if I'm really streaming
right.
it live
and,
here.
And in the famous words of Ronald Reagan...
Trust, but verify.
Correct. There you go. Thank you. See, he's so well-trained, I didn't even have to go there. I just set it up for him, right? He took the shot. Thank you. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Rad Life. We are at the headquarters of Orange County Talk Radio, and Mr. Paul Roberts.
What was that sound?
I keep asking for a helicopter.
Oh,
for a roving reporter or a helicopter.
All right, I'll find a helicopter.
You're going to find one? Okay. So, although given the conversation we're talking about today, might actually take on a different... Yeah. Could you find this helicopter sound? It might be actually kind of interesting. A little get-a-bird going on above us. We are sitting here today.
I think we're drinking already.
No. There was no drinking involved. Although the topic at hand is actually one that's pretty unnerving, and I'm so glad to have an expert in the studio to talk about it. It's something that if it hasn't touched you, you are aware of it. If you're a parent, you're probably concerned about it. If you're anybody that lives near a school or you know, in a small community or behind even a gated community gate, you may feel safe. But, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world that has changed in the last 10 to 15, 20 years. And it has taken on a little bit more deadly seriousness when it comes to things that can impact our children, can impact people that are sort of vulnerable members of our communities and our families. And so today I actually have, and I want to give a shout out to Wendy Ross for actually connecting us, but I have Adam Coffren with me from Safe Kids.
That's right.
Inc. And
and you know he's Irish.
Well, yes, with a name like that.
Right.
I mean, you told me 4 years ago when we started this radio show that I had a quota of Irish people that I had to bring into the studio, right?
You co-host a show with
an
Irish.
How have I been doing? Have I been doing okay
You've
with
You've been
that?
Doing good, okay. And you co-host a show. I get to speak up. I'm Irish. Your other co-host is Irish.
There's just no stopping you. It's like
we're everywhere.
You act like I have any control over it, right? there are times when I've just basically felt like, you know, I'm on a shelf and it's your show. Other times it's just been a therapy session, but... That's a different story for a different show.
That's a different
story.
No,
but really, seriously, I mean, if you turn on the TV, if you turn on the news, you right now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm always almost, if it comes on that there's been an active shooter situation or there's been a shutdown at a school, okay, it isn't it's no longer something that happens somewhere else.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I would not be surprised if I heard it was happening in my own backyard.
Yeah, you hold your breath and you say,
South County, you know, feet away from a gated community. You know, it could be, it's not something that just happens over there to those people on that side of the tracks anymore. And that's a reality.
Or
that side of the country. Excuse me. And that's a reality that we all, unfortunately, have to factor into our daily reality these days. And it impacts people and it has ramifications and ripple effect. And, you know, to think that kids basically, let alone have to have counselors come in after and kind of like almost do a debrief and reorient them.
And that it happens so often. And we now have a procedure of how to handle
right.
all this.
And thank God we do, because... And we'll talk
but
about
shame
this.
On us that we had to develop one in the
well,
first place. Yeah,
you know what? Yeah, it's true. But again, the only constant is change, right?
Yeah.
So with that, Adam, thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think
what's the organization called? The
organization is Safe Kids Inc.
Safe Kids Inc. And what do you do?
We create curriculum for students and communities to help prevent and survive violence.
And let's we don't usually do this all the time, but I think it's a good idea. We should start doing this more. At the beginning of the show, let's give people the website.
Yeah.
So they can basically look at stuff as we're talking.
You bet. So the website is safekidsinc.com. All of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, all that is at Safe Kids Inc.
And I want to go right into your background, Adam, because I think it's very, very much credibility setting for this. Give people a little bit of background on yourself, how you got to do this, the path that you've taken to get to this, because you shared that with me, and I think it's very telling.
Yeah, and so I'm an Orange County native. I was born and raised here, went to school here, went to college here. I never really left Orange County. It's a place that I love. And when it was time to, you know, join the workforce, get involved, I became a police officer. And so I started my career in law enforcement in the early 2000s.
What made you, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but what made you go down that path? Was there a family history? Was there a
It was a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my grandfather was a police officer.
All Irishmen, Irish cops. Come on.
I know
Boston
that.
And New York, that's all they got there. It's Irish cops.
Yes.
Okay. Right?
Were you ever a policeman, Paul?
No.
So let the policeman talk.
Right? Okay. There's one exception somewhere, right?
Yeah. Right. Somewhere in the woodpile there was an Irish policeman. but so your grandfather was a policeman. Where was he in Orange County?
No, he's Northern California.
Northern California.
So a little town called Sanger and eventually in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
And then went back. He got a law degree and moved to Southern California with the family and became a counsel for a brand new organization called the Alcoholic Beverage Control way back when. So there was some law enforcement in the family.
Close to your grandfather?
I was.
Okay.
Yeah. So as we think about heroes, he was really my hero.
Okay.
And so it influenced me quite a bit. And I initially told him I wanted to join the Marine Corps. And because he was a Marine in the Second World War, and he looked right at me, goes, "I did it, so you won't." So
good
what's
answer.
Your next option?
Good answer.
And so the next best option was become a police officer.
So he knew that you were going to go down that path?
Yeah.
Was he supportive?
Oh, very.
Very
cool. Yeah, in fact, he pinned my badge on me when I graduated.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I want the personal stuff on this show. So, you know, as to your comfort level, but I'm going to ask. So.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So served as a police officer right here in Orange County. And over my career, I was able to serve in our counterterrorism unit, working counterintelligence and try to prevent terror acts in Orange County. I worked our resort district, so the area that surrounded Disneyland, all the hotels and the tourism venues.
Sure.
And eventually, I was able to serve on what we called our active shooter team.
And you were on, you told me it was 20 years that you were on the force?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So I started young.
And what force was this? Was this a sheriff's or a city?
When you were 14.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, when I was 10.
What force did you serve with?
I served for the Garden Grove Police Department.
Garden Grove. Okay.
Right. So had a great career, enjoyed a lot of things I got to do. And one of those things was working our active shooter team. And this was right around the time that Sandy Hook had occurred. Mm-hmm. And our agency and a number of others here in Orange County had decided we don't have time to wait for a SWAT team. We don't have time to wait for all the extra help and the well-trained guys to show up. We need a team to help either contain or stop these very evolving situations quickly.
Mm-hmm. And can I stop you for 1 second? There's 34 cities in Orange County. I don't know how many of them have their own police force. Not all of them.
Not all of them.
A lot of
them
are
contract out.
Up to the sheriffs. Of those that do have police forces, is this becoming the norm? Do smaller cities like Garden Grove, which is a smaller city, it's not Irvine or Anaheim?
Or is it more of a regional approach to this?
Yes.
It's really city by city. So I would say of all the sheriffs have a team that's fairly similar to what we had. When you looked at other cities, so Anaheim, City of Orange, a number of them will have the common terminology is PRO, so primary response officer. So a number of them have these types of officers too, and it's not just for school shootings. It's for any sort of critical incident where there's violence involved, lives are at stake, and you need some special training along with special weapons to help stop that problem before a SWAT team could get there.
I'm going to put out a question to anybody who's listening on this, and if you're listening to this later, you can always email me or you could post it on the Facebook page for The Rad Life. Adam said, after Sandy Hook. I remember Sandy Hook. So my question to anybody who's listening is, do you remember Sandy Hook? What was the reaction when you heard about Sandy Hook? And let us know. I'm curious because there are certain moments that basically I think on the national consciousness really resonate. And I think that was one of them. personally.
But it didn't seem to move the needle, but for
that's
a moment.
That's what I'm asking. I'm not talking about policy and advocacy and all stuff. I'm talking about the personal. The personal reaction when you were wherever you were and you actually found out about that. What was your personal reaction to it?
Because the kids were so young. What were they, in kindergarten or preschool or something?
Yes, it was elementary school and 20-plus.
Not that it really matters what the grade is. But
that just made it more shocking.
Yeah,
very shocking.
They were 6 and 7-year-olds.
Yeah. So, please continue, Adam. So, the police department, you were part of that task force that basically was set up in Garden Grove.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how many incidences like this would arise in Garden Grove? Idyllic, suburbia.
Well, was it
kind of a small town feel to it? I wouldn't picture that this would happen in 100 years in Garden
Grove.
Well,
but it was. I'm guessing that it was a proactive reaction, right, to what had transpired, and people wanted to be prepared, maybe.
A little bit of both. So Garden Grove is a residential town. However, I guess we do a really good job at PR. We are a very crime-ridden town, very high-violence
really?
Town.
Okay.
We have numerous gangs that claim the town. So it is a very active city. But we do have our great residential areas. And, I grew up there. So I'd say it's a pretty good place to live.
And we talked about at lunch how Anaheim also is, it's the whole gamut, right?
Yeah.
You got certain areas in Anaheim that
are
not Anaheim
Hills.
That's true.
Bumps up against Anaheim.
So to Paul, and Paul will do this every once in a while, he'll kind of reflect and echo the bubble mentality, which
right.
is basically mm-hmm. what Orange County? Yes, Orange County is very diverse. Mm-hmm. You may live in a very small footprint of it, but actually even within the same city boundaries, there's a whole range of different dynamics and
That's
microcosms
true.
And all this.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we did respond to a number of critical incidents on the team. We'd usually, each officer, I would say, we respond between 3 to 12 a year, depending what shift you work, where you worked. And so we were a very active team in addition to what we were doing in our normal patrol routine
sure.
and our normal assignments. So it was during that time, and we were training quite a bit, and I had started on my days off training active shooter survival for a third-party company. So mm-hmm. I was both doing it at the police department, teaching our hotels, teaching schools, and also doing it on my days off.
Mm-hmm.
And after a few years of doing this, it was early 2014, I'm in Los Angeles at a private Catholic school teaching their K-8 teachers what to do mm-hmm. should something happen. And I had this third grade teacher raise her hand and she goes, "Hey, Adam, I really enjoyed your presentation. Really great information. However, I have a classroom of 20 third graders and I really don't want to be the only person in that classroom who knows what to do.
Mm-hmm.
How would you suggest that I share the information that you shared with me, but in a way that would be age appropriate for them?"
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in a long time, I had gotten stumped in front of a class. Mm-hmm. I had no answer for her.
Yeah,
at
how
all.
Do you tell third graders this information and
be
not
prepared
just
and what to do
the teacher
without
only?
Scaring the heck out of them that there's
exactly
yeah
yeah we didn't want to induce more trauma, didn't want to induce more fear, more anxiety, mm-hmm. Quite the opposite. And I kind of bumbled an answer. I said, "Well, you're a teacher, and I'm sure you know what to do. And here's some
information.
It's your
classroom,
right?" I just kind of, I really didn't have an answer for her, and it started.
Well,
it's
a very controversial idea. I mean, that she presented to you, right?
It was, yeah. I had never heard of it, and the company I was working for at the time, I had called them and said, "Hey, I got a doozy for you. What? how should I handle this question?"
Hey, parents, what should we tell your third graders about
yeah.
this? Right? Should we even talk to them about it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they said, "Hey, we have a couple of parent resources. We have kind of a kid's storybook, and that's about it. So too bad we don't deal with the kids."
Mm-hmm.
And that just didn't really sit well with me. And this teacher, I started kicking around. I go, she might be on to something here. So anyhow, fast forward a few months, and sure enough, I respond to a critical incident at a middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So kids are at lunch. They have to go on a lockdown immediately. Two people coming to their campus with cargo pants and fatigues, and they're jumping fences with backpacks.
Don't worry, Paul.
And
let's not prejudge cargo
right?
pants wearers here, right?
But obviously, they were camouflage cargo pants. So
yeah.
I mean,
camouflage cargo pants.
Camo.
No, he hasn't gone that far.
He hasn't gone that far yet. Right.
So if he does, what do I do? No, we'll talk about that
right.
later. Okay.
And so I, as in my career was, I had the dumb luck of being right across the street. And so it was time to deploy, just like we had always trained. So I'm in the school by myself with my rifle, looking for guys in camouflage cargo pants. And I'm looking into the windows and watching these middle schoolers, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, and their teachers looking back at me through the windows, completely fear-struck.
Yeah.
They had to scatter from lunch, so some were in bathrooms. A couple had ended up, I think, on a roof somehow, some way. They were in all kinds of mismatch, not in their classroom, not with their teachers. And that voice of that third-grade teacher started ringing in my head again. Mm. And it dawned on me. I'm like, we are kind of doing this really all backwards. In the way that we're training, in the way that we're teaching, in how we're dealing with this situation. So if you think about, and for anyone in education understands the dichotomy of how you learn. So there's a theory in which the very basic level of understanding is memorization. Mm-hmm. So I tell you something, you kind of understand what I tell you, you memorize it maybe. And then there's multiple levels up to a mastery level, in which case you're able to actually teach it back. Mm-hmm. And you're able to perform and answer questions and engage and have a depth of knowledge. But what we were doing is we were giving teachers an hour or two of training of a topic that's very complex, that is very hard to even emotionally deal with.
Right.
And we expect them on the worst day of their lives, under worst stress they've probably ever felt, to perform superheroes, like supermen, superwomen, step up like a military or a police officer would, and handle something. And we've only given them an hour or two instruction, or they watched a 7.5 minute video of Run, Hide, Fight, or they've done something, but it's the checkbox.
Yeah.
They were expecting them to operate at a mastery level in the worst condition.
I did my training. Here's my certificate.
And only giving them the very basics of what they need to know.
That's one of the reasons I'll give a little politicization here. This idea that we're going to arm teachers. I'm going to take Mrs. Smith.
Leave it alone. I'm going to ask him.
I want that somehow they're going to respond SWAT officer under stress, a third grade Mrs. Smith.
The closest to an authority position you have on this is that you're wearing cargo pants. So just leave it alone. Okay. All right. Other than that,
I have no knowledge.
You have no knowledge base. Okay. So here you are facing the situation. The voice is resonating in your ears. You're realizing that what you've been doing isn't sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do?
So about 2 weeks later, as good all good cop conversations are, I'm having a cup of coffee over the hood of a police car with maybe donuts were there, maybe not, and with one of my partners on that team.
Yeah.
And we started having the conversation. We started chit-chatting. I said, hey, something's bugging me. And we were talking about how the school thing worked out and everything else. I said, look, here's the deal. And I told him what this teacher had told me now almost a year prior. We had kind of gone over the middle school incident. And I go, there's got to be a way we can teach kids this. There has got to be a way.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked right at me and he goes, well, why don't we write a kid's book?
Mm-hmm.
I said, we write a kid's book? And he goes, well,
those are good donuts and coffee.
Right? Exactly. I mean, over that, you can do anything, apparently.
Buy-in was
right?
there, yeah.
And so he goes, no. He goes, I write on my days off. So I was teaching on my days off. He was a published author on his days off.
Oh,
and his family is very creative, has a number of best-selling books. And so he comes from a very creative family.
Talk about universal alignment, right?
No kidding.
You had no – how long did you know this guy?
We had worked together. We'd actually become really good friends. So we'd worked together for about 3.5-4 years.
And never knew that this was a part of that?
Didn't really ever come up, yeah.
Do you remember when we were walking up, I said we don't have conversations anymore with people?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't really just sit down and just have conversations. And, you know, somebody who was Southern originally on the show a while back, and he said, we visit.
Yeah.
We don't visit anymore, right? That's amazing that you knew the guy for
a
while.
That was a habit in the South. Let's just stop over and visit.
Okay,
yeah.
So here you are armed, excuse the pun, but right, literally with a person who writes – in his free time, and you teach in your free time. I mean, curriculum word comes up to mind right away, yeah.
And that's kind of how we started. And we go, well, let's try a kid's book and see what happens.
Okay.
So we authored a short coloring book.
Okay.
And then we came up with a way to teach kids, because we knew we had to keep it simple, we had to keep it easy, we had to keep it age-appropriate, non-fearful. And so the acronym we came up with was HERO. And
which
HERO
stands for?
Hide, Escape, Run, and Overcome.
And at the same time, it's an empowering word, because you're basically telling the kid can be a hero.
Exactly. And kids they're dialed into superheroes. That's already something in their vocabulary. They kind of understand some of this. So we wrote a coloring book called Farmer Frank and the Farm Friends. And it looked like a Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Wile E. Coyote type thing, which is, again, in the era that we grew up in watching.
Who illustrated this thing? Obviously, there's an illustrator involved.
There was, yeah. So we searched an illustrator in Texas who actually drew for a living education books.
Okay.
So that was, so we said, here's our story. Here's what we want to do. He illustrated this, all the little farm friends. And we had this, what we thought was this really cool story.
So ladies and gentlemen, when you see cops basically having coffee and donuts, don't just assume that that's all that's happening.
They're being productive.
Right? We're being productive.
There's a kid's book, a coloring book, no less, with an illustrator in Texas involved.
Right?
Yeah.
So
great story.
So we get this thing, we try it out. So we run a small pilot of a couple hundred students, and we said, hey, let's see if the book and the imaging and the coloring, all this stands on its own.
Where did you run your pilot?
Oh, right here in Orange County.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
So, and it,
it's a shout out. I mean, who bought into letting you do that as a pilot?
So the early ones was all family and friends.
Oh, cool.
We went, because we didn't really want to go into a school or preschool or anything just yet. So
you're beta testing.
We beta tested, with those that were close. And even though they were close.
I mean, family will take all kinds of abuse, right?
Oh, yes, so they will, yeah.
Just give them a color.
Right? It fell flat on its face. What we wanted it to do versus what it did. The kids thought it was a cool story and they colored it, but there was no connection to what was
retention,
going on. There
connection.
Was no retention. There was no behavioral change. There was nothing. So we took a step back and said, all right, well, maybe we need something more, right? We need to somehow look at, can this be a lesson plan? Can it be a true curriculum? So we started to engage educators.
Okay.
And so we brought on a doctorate of education, curriculum design, and a couple of former superintendents and some school teachers. And we said, look, here's what we want to do. How do you think
we can do it? Yeah.
And over the course of about the next 8 months, we came up with the original lesson plan concepts of the HERO program.
Which are?
So it's five lessons.
Okay.
One for each of the acronym, hide, escape, run, overcome. And then depending on the grade level, it's pulling it all together. So they get to go through an interactive story. Or in the older ages, it's prevention. So learning how to prevent violence, and then it's hide, escape, run, overcome.
So it's not just awareness. Awareness to a certain point, but then you add the layer of prevention.
So the
engagement,
lessons,
prevention.
Exactly. We wanted to empower.
Yeah.
Right? We wanted to empower by awareness, by prevention, at multiple ages to realize that people don't have to hurt you, to realize that you don't always have to be a victim.
And I want to just take a minute here because you shared something with me over lunch too. For the people who are listening or who will listen to this later, give people the age range that you guys are actually, or the grade range that you guys are currently servicing, because I know you're also expanding your reach beyond.
Correct.
Right? So what is your current focus or area that you guys service, if you will?
So the current lessons reach as young as TK or transitional kindergarten all the way through 12th grade or seniors in high school. Moving into, we just started development on early childhood education. So looking at the 2 year, 2.5 year old range all the way up into TK.
And I'm going to ask this question because anybody who's listening to this is probably a little bit, flabbergasted that we need to actually talk to 2 year olds about something like this. But unfortunately, like we said at the beginning of the show, this is the reality of our living, modern living. How is it different, or the way that you guys are structuring that now for that age bracket versus maybe older?
You know, the early childhood education came pretty much as a unilateral request of every school district and partners that we work with. And at that age group, it's really listening to trusted adults, listening to whether it's their parents or whether it's their teachers, that should something happen, whether at school or at the mall or when they're at the park, that they have some very basic understanding that this is dangerous, and to follow the direction of mom or dad or their teacher as a way to have them act quicker, as opposed to just sheer panic sitting in and them completely shutting down.
So it's a more of an awareness, initialization of awareness at that age.
Correct.
And then, like you said, as you get for the older grades, that basically then there's a preventive component that's added to it as well.
Correct.
For those who are listening, it's not we're not basically saying let's turn your kids into child soldiers. Basically, at the age of three, that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah. In fact, that's the last thing. The number one thing we really wanted to do when at this program and at every age is to preserve the that innocence, to not jade their students and to not jade children.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah.
We really wanted to treat it like, well, for all of us that grew up here, right? Earthquake drills, stop, drop, and roll, duck and cover. So these are all things that are scary to all of us, you know, in an earthquake and a fire. But we've found a way to teach it to kids, and we spend so much time with it, and it's not fearful. Now, granted, violence is a little bit more complex than an earthquake.
Sure.
But the concepts of how do we engage and teach a life skill to become autonomous is the same.
Well, it's a preparation thing, right? It's an awareness and preparation thing. I mean, you know, you hope against all hope that you never face yourself in that situation, but there's a sense of empowerment and at least a sense of control of your life should you be facing that situation, that you have something you can fall back on versus we're just going to be in denial and bury our heads in the sand and not have that be part of it. And kudos to those who have basically given you the opportunity. I mean, just give, you threw a number at me. How many kids have you basically positively impacted and empowered at this point?
Over the last 2 years, we're just now north of 50,000 students.
50,000 students in 2 years.
Yeah.
Wow. And is it mostly local? Is it how far is your reach right now?
So our reach is from through Northern California, across Southern California, and we're moving this year into Arizona and Texas.
That's phenomenal.
And do the school districts bring you in to put this program on, or is it some parents find and teach their kids themselves? Or
a combination of both? Or?
You know, it's primarily the schools. Now, when I say that, both public and private schools, and it's been from all directions. We've had parents that have championed this because they feel it's important, and they quite frankly don't know how to talk to their kids about it. And they're usually shocked that the school is not doing something.
Where would a parent learn how to talk to their kids?
Exactly. Unless you were a police officer in the military or something, you'd have very little skill set as to speak to an expert.
Adam, we don't even know, and Paul will tell you this, we don't even know how to talk to our parents about giving up driving, right, when they get too old, let alone, like, I'm going to talk to my two-year-old about how basically to make sure that they cover themselves in case there's an active shooter. I mean,
Yeah, and, you know, the thing we really think about is teaching that life skill. You know, the active shooter is a thing that is probably the least likely, but we hear the most about. What we hear the least about, but is more likely, is the stranger danger, is the predators and the pedophiles, of the bullying that ends up in the violence. There's all these, if we think about our life in general, you see violence more every day, whether it's tangentially affects you, whether it's you're in a maybe an abusive relationship, or it rises into you find yourself in one of these events. The skill sets and the ideas are the same. The feeling your body gets is the same. The chemicals that are released are all the same.
I don't think anybody who's ever found themselves suddenly in an abusive relationship or abusive situation could have anticipated. It's not something that, you know, sometimes you will say, well, there must have been some signs or something like that. It's not necessarily the case every single time. Yeah. I think there's, you know, regardless of your age, you're faced with situations sometimes that just come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And we've had just to kind of expand a little bit on this in terms of the stranger danger thing, we had Rimana Shashibi on here, who basically set up a nonprofit called I think Global Heart 365. And Rima, if I have it wrong, I apologize. But basically, her focus is on childhood marriage, outlawing childhood marriage, and then also on sex trafficking. And she shared with us something that was very horrific for me, where actually 12-year-olds are being used to solicit to other 12-year-olds into that life.
Here in Orange County.
In Orange County, in San Diego, you know, I mean, So for anybody who's listening, we're talking about situations here. The awareness, you know, I can only imagine any parent basically having a real problem, you know, just trying to wrap their brains around the fact that they have to expose their child to this kind of adult reality so early on. But I don't know that we have an option anymore, and the only thing we really have an empowered option in or decision making in is how we go about it. And what you're sharing with us, Adam, is that you don't have to lose the innocence, but you can also still empower your children to watch out and self-protect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, in the younger grades, when we look at kindergarten through about third and even in the fifth grade, we have the conversation and we open up with people who hurt and people who help. Mm-hmm. And we do it in a Venn diagram, which for the educators out there, it's two circles that overlap. And we talk about all the people in life that are hurtful or that might want to hurt you, all the people that are in life that are helpful, and who ends up in the middle. Now, here in Orange County, when we started this, and the very first time we did this, out of kindergartners and first graders, for the people who hurt, by name, Hitler, Nazis,
Cholos. This is what came up when you're...
Yes. Killer clowns.
Color clowns.
Killer clowns.
Oh, killer clowns.
Yeah,
okay.
Murderers.
Okay.
And Stephen Paddock, who's a Las Vegas shooter.
Yeah.
Out of the mouth of a first grader.
Yeah.
These kids, and it blew all of us in that room out.
So they were much more aware than we
gave them. Well, they're a lot exposed and savvy, yeah.
Even if, you know, even for parents that try to shelter, you know, and I ask people all the time who say, you know, I stopped watching the news. I don't watch the news anymore. But if I ask you, hey, what happened over the last 2 days, you can usually pick up that there was something that the president said or something that some shooting or something. These kids are really the same way, even though you're protecting them from the iPads and
there's
the Facebooks and everything.
There's too much input
it's
all around.
It's just all around us, and they're picking up what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this generation, just to take it a step aside here, because I'm thinking of my own five-year-old grandson and the world he's growing up in versus the world I grew up in the 50s and 60s here. And I see him sometimes overloaded on – I see two different patterns that worry me sometimes. One is he's surrounded by violence because he watches all these superhero stuff. It's all superhero. And so he emulates it. He's kicking and karate kicking and all this stuff. And he plays these violent games on the iPad and everything is killing and cutting somebody's head off. And I start saying, I don't know if this is good or not. What is that? It's trivializing violence to him. It's turning into a video game. At the same time, I see him more frightened than I ever was at this age. He's much more likely to, what's that noise? What's that? Because he assumes it's like what he's seen in a video game or a movie or what or the news. He's much more willing to go there and think something bad is happening. What's that, Grandpa? Who is that? And I worry about both of those. Their kids are immune, are desensitized to violence because they see it so often, or are super sensitized to it and are therefore more frightened.
Well, and I don't think there's anything that's happening to properly compartmentalize that.
Yeah.
As that it is a game that is not reality. The line blurs.
Mm-hmm.
And if where would a parent know, especially first time parent, where would they know to basically adjust that? Nobody's talking about it.
We struggle prepared, with it. When do we say turn it off? That's enough. Don't watch mm-hmm. this. And telling him that that's just a game. Like, for example, he's enamored with this game called Five Nights at Freddy. These animatronic creatures come alive at night at a place like Chuck E. Cheese and then terrorize the world. It's a huge game. Oh, they have songs and everything. I don't know where this thing came from. It's like Killer Clowns kind of thing.
So the question really is the current generation any more danger than the previous generations that also basically face the same impulses and same stimuli, right? But are we in an escalating situation, or is this just the current manifestation of the same issues?
Yeah, and what's your take on this thing? Are they desensitized or super sensitized or both at the same time here?
You know, when I speak, I usually open up my presentation with, we're living in interesting times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys qualified it perfectly. So every other prior generation, really probably starting just before the Gen Y, had mm-hmm. television, radio, you played physical games, you played with your friends, you went outside. This generation...
We had Game Boy.
Right? Yeah, Game Boy, right?
I didn't, but yeah.
Nintendo, right?
Sega. we had a little bit.
Pong, yeah, right.
A little bit.
Atari.
Yeah.
But you had something. It was almost like another physical game, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Now what you have is technology that surrounds them. You have hyper-realistic virtual reality. Mm-hmm. You can talk to people over a set of headsets and a microphone.
It's no longer just you.
It's no longer just you, and it starts to humanize the game more, not only from the human point of view of talking, but also from what you're seeing. And in a recent study, they looked at what is this doing to adolescents, right? Children, if you're playing hyper-violent games, this isn't, you know, Angry Birds or the, you know, Rubies or the whatever it is. This is where you're, like you said, things are coming alive. You have to kill things. You have to maim
and
murder.
Yeah, sniper.
That's a million of them.
You know, yeah.
Right. So here's what happens. After the course of gameplay, after a few hours, what starts to happen is it turns off the empathy center in their brains. So you start to lose empathy for what's happening in front of you. So sensitivity or desensitized, maybe it's better that we're de-empathizing. Mm. So they're not understanding that you are hurting another thing or
the
another
causality
person.
Factor, yeah.
Exactly. And so that's causing a weird effect. And when you turn that off, which I think you start to see, and there's still quite a bit of research that's being conducted because it is such a newer phenomenon, is how is it affecting you? We see the anxiety and the fear is skyrocketing. In our high school pilots, we had a 16-year-old who really qualified it for us best. She said, look, we're the generation of active shooters. Mm-hmm. And she looked around this room and she pointed right at me. She goes, you don't understand. She looked at her teachers. You don't understand. She goes, look, I grew up post Columbine, right? Which is really the first major school shooting in 1999.
I remember Columbine too.
She goes, then there was Virginia Tech when they were five, six, and seven. Mm-hmm. Big national news story. Mm-hmm. Then they start to go into school. Now you have Sandy Hook in 2012. Mm-hmm. And she goes, while it never happened at my school, she goes, it was all around us. You heard about it on national news, and then locally, someone would be arrested for bringing a gun to school or a weapon to school. Someone would have a fight after school, or someone would threaten we'd get a bomb threat, or we'd get a threat of an active shooter. Mm-hmm. She goes, so we see it nationally. It's affecting us locally. And for her generation, the most recent, the Parkland shooting, has really, now they're at an age that they can do something, and there's such anxiety around the violence, and because it is, we get it more because we're constantly on our phones. Everyone's a news reporter who's got a video and has access to any sort of social media platform.
What was your feeling after Parkland and the reaction that happened?
So we had just completed a professional development for the Hero Program at a school out in Palm Springs.
Okay.
And so that story was unfolding while we were training the teachers to start to use the Hero Program for that year. After leaving that training, we all looked at each other, and there was three of us at the train, the three, kind of three main, folks that really got this thing off the ground. We all looked at each other and went, what in the world is going on? And as we continued to listen to it more and hear it unfold, it broke our hearts to know that there are programs, there's things, there's, especially as we learn now, I mean, there was hundreds of warning signs literally with him. Mm-hmm. And just that this was a failure of, I don't want to say the system, but you have so many things that could have stopped it, prevented it, deterred it. Even during the actual incident, things that went wrong. It absolutely breaks our heart. And it just, that along with some of the more recent shootings in Colorado continues to fuel us every day on how do we help prevent, mitigate, and stop these incidents and get people out alive.
And so with the Hero Program, talk about those things, how you can stop it, how you can mitigate it so fewer people get harmed, mm-hmm. and how you can catch it earlier.
I want to add another layer to this, and we can address it right after that, is do you believe that we're doing everything that we can in terms of advocacy, policy, and so forth, or is there actually deniability approach to some of this stuff? You've been at it from the reinforcement side. Mm-hmm. You've been at it from the training and instruction side. You have a unique perspective to be able to look at that. And I'm just asking, because again, you can prepare somebody all the time, but you're preparing them for something that could happen. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we could be doing societally that actually would limit or minimize the chances that something like that would happen?
Can we stop it, or can we just minimize the damage?
But I want you to address the thing with the Hero Program first, okay, if you don't mind, Adam.
Yeah. So when we look at the Hero Program, it's an acronym for Hide, Escape, Run, Overcome. And if you think about what your body's natural response is, which is fight, flight, and freeze under any sort of heavy adrenaline, what we're doing is giving permission and a set of tools and a direction for both adults and students to react to what's going on in front of them. When we think about the prevention, in middle school and high school, we start talking about the seven behavioral signs as studied by the FBI and the Secret Service and boil it down to them for what it looks like, what they're going to hear from their friends, what they're going to hear from other people, from their peers, from other students, and how to help really get someone the help that they need. Because there were signs leading up to all of these shootings. The seven signs, every single active shooter that's been studied since Columbine 2 now has exhibited multiple, five, six, or all seven.
So what are the seven signs?
So when we look at the signs, we look at, there's a planning portion of it. So there's planning and a grievance. So usually there's a massive grievance, right? Whether it's they've been bullied or whether they've been wronged or whatever it is, this grievance takes over their life. And there's a planning portion to it. So they start to plan that attack. We talk about the video games, right? So heavy use of violent video games or violent media, watching very violent things to desensitize themselves. Mm-hmm. Violent expression is one of those as well, where they're actually out there actually testing the waters that they can hurt something. And we look at the Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland shooter, mm-hmm. Was posting pictures of dead animals on his Facebook mm-hmm. and on social media and was bringing them to school. We have what you call a commando complex, where they become a little bit more militarized. Mm-hmm. They start becoming more fascinated with guns and militaries and tactics, and suicidal ideas. You know, these every single active shooter either kills themselves, is killed by law enforcement, or life is over as they know it. They're going to be incarcerated for the rest of their lives. So, you know, whether you plan on taking your
own life,
there's
no walking away.
There's no walking away. And we usually hear it by venting. And so venting or leaking their plans in either a validation attempt of their grievance or by trying to solicit help. And so we look at a combination of those and you start to compile those together. You can start to get people help that might be going down that road early on.
So are we asking five-year-olds and fifth graders to now be not just vigilant, but to be vigilantes, to report back on people, to say to somebody, hey, I think Timmy, and that seems to open up a dangerous ground here, too. We're having fifth graders rat each other out and start saying, but if they don't, then these guys go loose and do crazy things here.
Well, we start prevention at middle school. So we start in the middle school era or in the middle school age. But there's a very fine line between being a snitch and helping.
Right.
And exactly. So we start to, in that conversation, in that lesson, we start talking about the fine line of, look, if your friend really needs help, then if you're a friend, if you're a true friend, you want to help your friend.
You're
going
to help
right?
him.
And if he's going into crisis because there's a grievance, because he's been bullied, because she may have whatever, you know, the first relationship is over and you know, now she's got this vendetta against him or whatever the case is, that these people start to go down this road. And it's a time frame. It's a continuum of time leading up to an event. So whether it's an active shooter or whether it's, you know, a smaller act of violence, if you're really a friend to somebody and you really care about that person, then you want to try to help as much as you can.
So Paul asked this question earlier, and I will ask it now, and then I will expand back on to what I had asked just a few minutes ago. Do you think the idea of actually arming teachers is a solution, a temporary solution, not really a solution, just a feel-good that we basically are once again sort of like what you said when you trained the teacher but then realized that, you know, you're basically telling the teacher to take responsibility of the classroom versus also train the
kid. At the worst moment in their life, under the most severe pressure, they're supposed to remember two hours of training and act like a commando.
Right. What are your feelings about that?
You know,
that kind of extreme kind of maybe militarization of a school system.
It has a place, but I would say it's a very small sliver. And so what do I mean by that? By and large, arming teachers and arming schools is not a great idea, especially in a metropolitan area. So there's a few things. Number one, there's now a gun in every classroom, and there's multiple guns at every school. So you have
they just provided an armory in the school.
And we, you know, as police officers, they would tell us, you bring a gun to every fight, and that gun is yours, right? You're introducing a firearm into everything that you go to. So you have a training issue as far as securing it, maintaining that weapon to make sure it doesn't get in the hands of kids, you know, that may want to try to use it. You have a training requirement that if you are going to use that, right? I mean, there's logistics behind it. I mean, look, if you become a police officer, you go through a psychological test, a background examination, you get put through the ringer to be able to go do that job. And we're now handing over firearms to people that have not been through the same rigorous scrutiny, I guess you could put it.
And doesn't it just include the chaos and the carnage? I mean, you've not got a firefight, people shooting like on a Rambo movie. Everybody's shooting at each other, and the cops are supposed to come in and first stop at everybody and then find the bad guy out of the bullets flying around everywhere.
To play devil's advocate, Paul, what you're basically saying is you're evaluating it from a position where nothing is taking place. If something is actually happening and somebody's already in there and is armed, the question at that moment in time is, would somebody else on the opposing side that could return that fire being armed a bad idea or a good idea? And I got to tell you, I'm kind of torn.
Oh, I'm not torn at all. I think it's complete chaos. It just ramps up the level of violence. You've got amateurs shooting it out like an OK Corral. It seems like
if that was your grandkid,
you're not going to stop anybody.
If that was your grandkid, 5-year-old grandkid in that classroom, Paul, and you had an active shooter, and you have found out that school basically has now been in shutdown because there's an active shooter, and your grandkid is in that class, you're telling me that nowhere in your brain would you feel that maybe the odds would be more in your favor of your grandchild if somebody was armed.
I'd be more frightened that Mrs. Smith is going to shoot my kid accidentally trying to shoot at the bad guys here, because Mrs. Smith is not there trained to pull out her pistol and start.
What if Mrs. Smith was trained?
I can't. She'd have to go to training all the time like cops do. She'd have to be. She can't just do this once in a while.
What if she did?
Impossible.
See, but that's what I'm saying.
I'm more frightened by the introduction of more weapons into the school. I think more kids would get hurt.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I can't think of.
Tell me one example, and I'd be curious to know if he's an example. One example where a school teacher, the gym teacher, the tough guy in the school, has pulled out a weapon and stopped something from getting worse. Tell me one example of one school in America where this has actually been tried and it worked.
Oh, the problem with the question is that we have an armed teachers yet, so that's a bit of a cart in front of the horse.
Maybe.
Right? What we do see, though, I will to back up to that, what we do see is those same people, maybe not using a firearm, but they're using baseball bats. They're using something else.
For that, yeah.
And they're using it as a show of force. They're using it as a weapon. I will tell you, like I said, overall, for all the things we've been talking about, arming a lot of teachers is 98%, let's say, usually not a great idea, except for if you're in rural parts of this country. And there are some schools that are armed prior to this whole phenomenon because of the threat of bears and mountain lions and just the wildlife.
Or the cops can't get there fast enough. They're 4 hours away or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you look at arming, as it being a really plausible solution, would be your nearest deputy's 45 minutes, an hour away. Mm-hmm. Even if you're locked down, got the doors locked, I mean, the guy can bring a acetylene torch and saws and tools and dismantle, cut a hole in the wall.
Well, especially now that, you're not the first person to basically take on a scenario of this nature. If you're preparing, I would think that lockdowns and closed doors would be something you would plan for as well and be armed with basically ways to break through those.
Let me ask you another question here because you open the door, I got to bring this question up.
Well, I know, but he mentioned something I want to basically bring up because it's really also feeds into what you were saying is, and you mentioned this to me, Adam, when we were having lunch, is that for some people that would say, well, let the cops take care of it, they'll be there, right?
Yeah.
And you said to me that SWAT's response time is?
So the average police response, so we'll start at the quickest response you're going to get. The national average is about 15 minutes to an incident like this. A SWAT response is about an hour and a half to 2 hours away.
Wow.
So what you're going to get
I wanted to add that into this conversation.
All right, so here's my question, honestly. Do we want to turn into a society? Do the police want vigilantes trying to handle the situation before they get there? Do the police themselves want somebody trying to intervene other than them? I thought the whole idea is the police are trained, they're tested, they're ready, they're prepared. Maybe they can't get there fast enough. Maybe we need more cops and all this other stuff here. But do police officers really want to surrender that role to other part-time enforcers?
I would say vigilante is a little bit of a strong word to use for teachers.
I agree.
But that being said, it's...
Are they going to surrender their role and say, better that the teachers are shooting it out before we get there, and then we'll clean up the mess when we get there?
But to be fair to this conversation, Paul, hold on.
I can't believe cops want people shooting out before they get there.
Paul, you have to understand that the way that you're presenting these things right now is a very strong ideological position. Hold on a second. You're painting pictures that are extreme. You're using language that basically has no range in it, okay? You're labeling things in a very extreme manner to say no to it.
You're going
to
have teachers start shooting it out before the cops get there. I can't believe the cops would like
self-defense,
that.
Self-defense, protecting those who you basically are entrusted in keeping over the period of time that you have them. I mean, to bring the conversation back to what we're talking about.
But they're amateurs.
We're going off the topic, and I need to pull this show back.
Okay? I can't believe anybody could conceive that.
You're going down a path that isn't this show. We're not talking about this, okay? What we're talking about is awareness and preparation. And Adam made a point very early on of saying that this is not about engaging. This is about protection and prevention. And the HERO program stands for, again, Adam?
Hide, escape, run, and overcome.
Right. So let's keep this on topic because all of these issues are very valid. But that's not what we're talking about here. And they take on a personal nature. They take on policy and advocacy, political bent and leaning, and all of that stuff basically is where we start losing the focus on the fact that kids are, unfortunately, in today's society, subject to a reality that you, growing up, and me growing up, didn't have to face.
No question.
And we have to prepare them in some format to save lives.
I no question about that.
So let's keep the conversation.
But you went
there.
Into arming teachers.
No, you brought it up, and I asked what Adam's reaction is, and yeah. I felt his response was actually very valid. He's saying, you know, that in most cases, he told you, he pretty much agreed with you, but you just didn't hear him. It's the fact, you know, two Irishmen agreed. I mean, in a radio station in Orange County. Heaven forbid that you know, has the sky has parted, I think, and the sun has shone through. You know. But genuinely, okay, what we're talking about here, and I am glad that it's controversial, because it should be, okay? We should be aware, we should be awake, we should be engaged, we shouldn't be basically burying our heads in the sand, but we also should be aware that there are ways to do something that is positive and empowering, such as through the Safe Kids program.
Yeah, and, you know, he brings up a good point. Whether you have teachers who are armed or not armed, whether you have these situations are chaotic, no matter which way you look at it.
Yeah.
Whether it's one person with a gun, two people with a gun, right? It is completely chaotic. And so there's no way to bring calm to that storm in the moment, really. I mean, what you can do is you start to mitigate and start to chip away at some of that. And so as opposed to, you know, we say it's really a numbers game, right? You have usually one, maybe two people who want to show up and hurt somebody,
right.
hurt some students, hurt some kids, hurt some faculty. Instead of having your perfect example, if you have a school that has 700 students and 60 faculty members, and only 60 of those faculty members get the training, and of those 60, maybe 20 were really engaged and paying attention and really think this is important. On that day when someone shows up, and we know statistically in elementary it's an outsider, middle school and high school it's a student, it's someone on the inside, current or former, that when that person shows up, that I'd rather have 760 people prepared and know what to do to mitigate loss of life and injury.
To exit safely, to help others to exit safely.
To do whatever you have to do, whether it's overcoming physically, whether it's running, whether it's escaping, whatever, you know, locking down or hiding, as opposed to those 60 teachers who got the training of which the 20 really paid attention, and you're hoping that one of those 20 just happens to be at the right place at the right time when this person shows up or this student shows up. And so...
Because that's chaos too, Paul. That's chaos too.
I don't want it to become more chaotic and increase the chances of something bad happening.
When
the shootout at the OK Corral seems like not the answer to me.
Well, you've watched too much Western movies. But,
well, that's what it seems like, because you're asking people who are not trained professionals to suddenly act like that.
I honestly believe that there is room in the middle for alternative ways to address situations, right? Because what you're talking about is extremes, which unfortunately we face. But if I was going to be a kid going through the school system today, okay, I would probably feel a lot more empowered and a lot less at risk if I knew that I had a couple of options of how to react, just like in case of earthquake.
Well, you need training. Clearly, these kids have got to be trained. We can't be
And I'm going to put a word out right now, because I know we've had a lot of people on this show. We've got a lot of people on this show that are elected officials. We've got a lot of people that are in city council. We've got a lot of people that I know that are basically in school districts, other people that are even higher up. This is a situation, and I know the hearts of all these people, and I know... You know, I urge you to really look into this. And if it's not something that you're basically being engaged in, to be aware that there are things that can be brought to bear to benefit everybody in those school systems.
Who wouldn't want kids to? And that's an interesting question. Is there any pushback? Is there any bit?
Have you had any issues? You've been doing this with 3-4 years almost.
Anybody say, no, we don't want this in our school, or for whatever reasons, or parents or whatever?
You know what's interesting? The educators, so we came from a very educator centric and law enforcement centric point of view. Usually the pushback we get is, I hate to say it, ego-driven from a campus safety or a district safety officer, because it's a curriculum.
We're already dealing with this.
We got it. Yeah, we got this handled, right? And, you know, I heard it throughout my entire career, right? I mean, we as officers hate to show weakness. We hate to show that maybe there's something else better out there. Maybe that we're not doing
somebody enough. Knows more than I do.
Exactly. And there's always this kind of you know, chest bumping kind of mentality sometimes. But, you know, when we look at it as a curriculum, the curriculum and the educator folks really love it, because it's the professional development for the teachers in language that they're used to. Mm-hmm. That's presented by other educators, or in a video format. You have the lesson plans. You have a student assistance or a student accessibility guide to deal with students that might have physical impairments. How do you run if you're physically impaired, sight impaired, sound impaired, learning disabilities, autism? How do we engage those students for equity and access in safety in schools?
Very good point.
Thought of those issues. Yeah.
And how do you engage in a drill and scenario that isn't trauma inducing but trauma informed? How do you engage in the conversation and practice these learned skills of these five lessons? And one of the things we wanted to do for teachers was that the whole thing crisscrosses English language art standards, so you're not adding extra time to your school year. You're using it in the time that you'd be teaching English or other lessons.
Because they're already stretched anyway.
Because they're already stretched thing on instructional hours. So and the teachers can earn professional development units here locally from Brandman University for the use of the program. Mm-hmm. So we really wanted something that was
you
easy
really
to use.
You really thought this through in ways I never even would have imagined here.
Yeah, we really wanted... You know, coming from an educator point of view, we wanted it. It's number one, we shouldn't be talking about it, right? We shouldn't be in this world, but we are.
We are.
Like we talk about
so much. Unfortunately, this is the reality.
And if this is the reality we're stuck with, how can we make it better? Right. And how can we do it without causing more harm than good, which is what we're starting to see in some of these hyper-realistic drills. And you're simulating gunfire and you're having, you know, you're doing, and again, it's all the best intentioned, but, you know, the research and the evidence that has gone into this program and what we've seen is, there's a very fine line of doing it, just like most things, and you have to be very careful. Some of the pushback is sometimes I don't want to deal with it, or it's a sign of weakness, which that's the last thing it is. We're here to help. Mm-hmm. We really are here to put it into this.
Can I ask another?
And Paul mentioned something regarding sort of, I think, if I may, Paul, like privacy, and then where kids are going to be snitching on other kids.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I think what's interesting about that is if you flip that coin to the other side. If that child that you're basically quote unquote reporting on, Paul, mm-hmm. genuinely has issues, isn't it better that we identify those as a society, as a support group, as a school system early and basically be able to possibly do something about it? Because the assumption is that I'm snitching is that the child that I'm basically pointing out as maybe having some issues and challenges is going to be penalized and it's going to be you know, they're literally going to basically fear the wrath of society around them. My point is, I'd rather basically recognize that early and basically give that child a chance to maybe break through that when they're first getting depressed or feeling, you know, isolated or, you know, bullied. I mean, we talk about bullying like, you know, everybody who's been bullied is basically a saint that basically has just been wronged. And yet these are the same things that if somebody actually had pointed out earlier, if a support group was there that said, listen, buddy, I know we don't know each other, but I've noticed that you're dealing with something. And then when I don't get a reaction, I report to somebody who's a caring, empathetic teacher in the environment that then basically takes a personal, you know, personal interest in the situation, and that child is saved further years of pain. Is that still snitching?
It has to do with what happens when the child is identified.
So unless we know how we're going to deal with it, we should not address the fact that there's an issue?
Here's the flip side of it. I'm sympathetic to every saying. We catch these kids early, we save their lives and others. But at the same time...
We turn a blind eye and we bury our heads in the sand.
But I only brought it up.
Possible outcome.
I only brought it
They're
up.
They're left to their own devices.
I only brought it up, though, because a lot of these kids are outsiders, they're loners, they're different than everybody else. That's why they're picked on.
Yeah, I know. They used to wear black leather jackets and white T-shirts and hung out on a bunch of bicycles.
Okay, but you're making fun of it. But I'm saying, I don't have a child like this, but if I had a child who was different and suddenly everybody is saying, oh, he's crazy, he's going to be a shooter, or he did this, and he's like, no, I'm just different. I wear different clothes, I look different, I act different than other kids in the thing. Does that immediately make me a suspect, and am I treated then as a criminal before I've even exhibited? I don't know what the seven signs are. I'd much rather have the children educated to make informed decisions and to do it in a loving way rather than I'm going to point out every kid that's different and then make them the subject of an investigation.
That's the problem. That's mm-hmm. the program we're talking about.
And that's one of the things we look at when we talk about prevention. You know, and Paul, you mentioned a lot of the stereotypical, I dress different, I eat by myself, I look.
Right.
And that is not at all anywhere. If you eat lunch by yourself, that's not an indicator necessarily, right?
But a fifth grader might think it was and then start saying, oh, we just had a class and I think he's a crazy person. He's going to do something wild because he eats
by
himself.
But isn't it great that if that sixth grader basically will go to a teacher and basically share that, the teacher now has an opportunity to actually correct that. And if the sixth grader basically feels that they can communicate with the teacher, then the teacher has an ability
unless the kid eating by himself feels like he's being punished and he's being singled out. And then
am I seeing personal stuff come out here?
Maybe a little bit, but I think you could. I don't know. Again, you want to make. I'm all for what he's doing. I'm just saying though. There's a danger in turning the kids into
informants.
Informants, because they're not informed in how to do this, and they'll start picking in every kid they don't like or every kid that's different.
Adam can speak for himself, but I don't think that's what he's proposing.
Clearly. But I could see if we go as a society.
So here's what's happening with this conversation. Okay, by adding that layer,
I'm just trying to.
I understand,
bring
but
up
by
a
adding
later.
This layer, we're taking away from the positives that we're basically trying to impart. Right?
No. You're taking this all the wrong
I'm
way.
I'm not. We have finite amount of time to convey a message relevant to a positive thing that's out there, and we're getting derailed into something that is not what we're talking about. So I would appreciate. Let's just go back to what we're.
It's
talking
a positive
about.
Program. I'm all for it. So, I think every school should be doing it. And
Paul
I
mentions
think
an interesting thing, and you know, misreporting wastes more time. And more energy and to his
Thank
point.
You.
So when we, and again, so in the first lesson, as we talk about prevention, that grade level, we open up with assumptions and facts. So the kids get to put up there that it's the loner at lunch. It's the person who wears a black trench coat.
It's your starting
person.
Point.
It's your starting point.
Right. You teach
then
them.
Through seven fact sheets, they work in groups and they learn some of the actual signs, what it might look like for them. Have they seen? So they get to engage and they come back and they list the facts. And they cross out the assumptions, list the facts, so therefore you don't have the kids who are eating lunch by themselves getting all this undue information.
So they've been they have now been imparted with new wisdom on taking what they perceive to be X to maybe not be the case every single time.
All for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to defend myself here. I wasn't trying to say about this program. I'm saying in general, if we start telling the kids are going to go out and identify the potential problems without teaching them what to look for, they're going to start picking at every kid they don't like.
I understand, yeah. Paul. What I'm saying,
misinformed.
What I'm saying, and it's a perfect actual exchange today, because this is such a controversial topic.
Yeah.
But what happens sometimes with controversial topics, be it this or the homeless issue or whatever, is we as a society dig our heels into where we ideologically stand, and we miss the fact that there's something on the table that can be used positively to move the needle.
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to basically also keep part here. I'm all for this exchange. Don't get me wrong. I like the controversy because it actually showcases the reality of the scenario. Mm-hmm. I started off by saying that this is an unfortunate reality that we deal with, that our kids deal with. Right. So let's give the website again, Adam, please.
You bet. SafeKidsInc.com and all the social media at SafeKidsInc.
And how do people get a hold of you? Is that through your website? Is there an email that we want to share with
yeah,
people?
Yeah, absolutely. Get a hold of us through the website. Any generic questions about school safety, info@safekidsinc.com. Anyone has questions for me specifically, it's adam@safekidsinc.com. So you can find me pretty much all over the internet.
And are there lots of people focusing on this, or is yours one of the few programs?
That's a very good question. How much is this getting attention-wise?
So because we have kind of disrupted the marketplace a little bit in how we're doing it, i.e. actually, as we've heard this even today, engaging the kids in this conversation. There's a lot of school safety companies that do a lot of training, a lot of good site assessments, all that type of thing. We're really the only true safety curriculum provider that looks to actually engage in safety curriculum directly to the students all the way down to kindergarten.
Because I've never heard of
once
engaging
again,
kids
once,
in it, yeah.
Once again, innovative California leads
right.
the way. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I will repeat again, please. You guys know who you are. I'm not going to name you. I'm not going to out you on the show, but there's a lot of people that I know that are in positions where they could actually at least look into this, possibly bring it to the attention of people that they are involved with or people that they're responsible for, whether you're a school district or city council member or a congressperson or what have you, supervisor or people that work with them. We have a good reach on this show. I really felt this topic was important to bring. And Adam was the perfect person to bring in. So thank you, Adam, again for dealing with us here today, right?
and
putting up with us.
And I'll say this, and I'm sorry if I was seen by antagonist. I'm only very adamant about the gun issue. I think that's nuts, but that's my opinion. I think that the other question you have to ask if everybody listening to this show is, if not this, then what?
Well, and if not this, why are you saying no to it if you don't actually look into it?
Oh, I think it's something we have to look into, and I think involving the kids is something I never thought of. I think they've sounded like they've got a very sensitive approach to this. I gave him some hard issues, and he had answers for all of them here. And I think that if not as uncomfortable, it's like sex ed was when I was a kid. Nobody wanted to deal with sex ed.
That's a very good
And we all pretended like we were just going to ignore it, and yet teen pregnancy kept soaring, and all the stuff kept happening. You can't deal with it by just sticking your head in the sand.
For all those people that wonder why I even let Paul basically engage with the show this much, for those who have asked for me to basically shut him down.
Shut him down.
Now, the reason why I do is exactly this, okay? You cannot have an exchange with having, without, I know, we've gotten to the point in this country where we can't have opposing points of view, where people can actually have an exchange. And this is literally, excuse the pun, point blank range, right?
I mean,
there's an 8x10 room.
And my back's to him, which is,
and your back's to him.
He doesn't like that, right?
Yeah, you should see the look on Adam's face all the time, right? No, but seriously, right? We don't do this. We don't have conversations with our kids. We don't talk about teachers in a positive manner sometimes where they are part of the solution to things of this nature. Okay. We are so asphyxiated on certain things and how we believe certain things. Yeah. But if you stop learning, if you stop opening yourself up to other possibilities, the only thing that is sure is that your outcome will always be the same. Okay. So educate yourself. Go to the website. Find out about this. Okay. Engage in conversation with your kids about this. There are ways that are out there, and I am proud as can be the fact that this is coming out of Orange County and that we're leading the way once again in California to something like this.
You know, it's real interesting. You know, our biggest fear going into this was we don't want to do any harm. We want to help. We don't want to, you know. Overall, what we have found across the board is that the anxiety, as we started the show with, of these kids has gone down pretty dramatically. We hear it from the parents and the teachers that student anxiety is down. Teacher confidence is up as far as they're confident in handling something like this, and that from our high schoolers,
you're saying once you put the program in place, their anxiety goes down and the confidence goes up.
Yeah, once they've gone through the lesson plans, and we had a high schooler point just flat out say, "Thank you for engaging us and talking to us because no one else has."
Yeah, nobody.
And you're and
nobody
for,
talks
for
to
those
the kids.
Parents that are out there and for the educators and everyone else. The kids are really yearning for something. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety, and there's not a lot of information that there's a lot of white noise about a lot of different things. And some we've talked to, you know, touched on the show. But if you think about it overall, a little bit of knowledge is really the antidote to a lot of this fear.
Engage, educate, and get involved, people. And I think I'm just going to leave it at that. I mean, you heard it from Adam directly. This program has had a positive impact. Kids have felt empowered. Teachers have felt empowered.
Anxiety
level has gone down. When was the last time in today's society have you actually found something that reduces anxiety?
All for anything that reduces anxiety and tension.
So, again, thank you, buddy, for being here.
Sir.
I really appreciate it very much.
I apologize if I was overly passionate about some of these positions here.
I think our listeners have become accustomed to that. So we don't want to deny them that portion of the show either.
Right.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me and Adam and Paul, always part of the show, on another episode of The Rad Life. This was not an easy conversation, but you know how we roll. We love conversations that are not easy. So keep having them.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.